Here we go. It's another week of the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Caleb Hatch. Big two-hour show to start things off this week. Coming up in our first hour, around 4:35, we'll talk to Dylan Sin from the Journal-Gazette. He was on hand for the Purdue Boilermakers Notre Dame game on Saturday. Plus, in hour number two, it's Monday. That means it's our 15 Minutes with Fish, presented by Cruzy Automotive Service. Don Fisher, legendary Hall of Fame voice of the Indiana Hoosiers, will join us to talk about Indiana's disappointing and somewhat frustrating loss to the Cincinnati Bearcats on Saturday. He'll talk to us coming up this afternoon at 5:20. Of course, you're always connected to the show at the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862, 46862. Questions, comments, suggestions, fire away. Almost wish I was taking calls today, because this is one of those days where you want to find out who's more disappointed, Indiana fans, Colts fans, and what do you have to say about it? Because it was rough. Very rough for both Indiana and the Indianapolis Colts this weekend. But it was, you know, quite a sports weekend, kind of recapping the weekend. Of course, high school football started things off on Friday night. Great games, including that one that was hyped up so much with Leo and East Noble, the battle for first place in the NE8. Ultimately, it could decide the championship with a head-to-head meeting between the Lions and the Knights. And what a game they ended up having up in Kendallville. It was Leo all the way with complete domination through three quarters. And then in the fourth quarter, East Noble not only came to life, but put on a furious rally to overcome a 32-12 deficit and tie the game up at 32. I think there was about 4 minutes left when they finally got it tied. And then Leo got the football, went the length of the field. Leo scores a touchdown to go ahead, decides to go for two because they feel like East Noble's probably going to go for two if they only go for one. And they weren't sure at that point if they could even get a stop on East Noble the way the Knights were rolling. So Leo goes for two, gets the two-point conversion. It's 40-32, and despite a threat from East Noble late, that's the way it ended. The Leo Lions get the big head-to-head victory over the East Noble Knights, 40-32. And so Leo wins round one. But I'll tell you what, we fully expect, as good as these two teams are, that they're probably going to meet again when it comes to the sectional tournament, because both of them happen to be in the same sectional. And then here in the Summit Athletic Conference, a couple of big games to decide who survives and who ends up falling out of contention, with one-loss teams being matched up. Carroll Dwenger, that one took place out at Shields Field at Bishop Dwenger High School. And Dwenger had to feel good getting home games back-to-back against Homestead and Carroll, knowing that those were two of the contenders in the SAC, and that Bishop Dwenger could perhaps win those two games at home. They would position themselves then to have lures in their sights and take the head-to-head to win the conference. Well, things have not gone well for the Bishop Dwenger Saints. They lost last week to Homestead, and then this past Friday, they got thumped by Carroll 42-23, and the game was not that close. Carroll was up 42-7, I believe it was, in the third quarter, as the Chargers ended up putting the running time thumping on the Bishop Dwenger Saints. And so for the first time in history, Dwenger has to face a running clock because of a deficit, and Carroll cruises to the win. We talked to Doug Dinan on the postgame show Friday night and asked the question, because right now it's hard to say which team is playing better, Bishop Lures or Carroll. They played head-to-head, and Lures obviously won that contest week one. We were there to see it with the opening of the new Carroll Stadium. But since then, Carroll has really come on. Since, you know, there was something that gave Carroll that boost, and it could have been Owen Sheely, the backup quarterback who came in to play for Jeff Becker when he was suddenly sidelined and quarantined in week number two against Snyder. And Owen Sheely played well, ended up leading Carroll to a victory over the Snyder Panthers, which to date is still the only loss that Snyder has suffered, because we had a chance to see Snyder defeat Homestead 17-14. Again, Nick Talamantes with a 45-yard field goal, providing the winning margin for Snyder, or for Snyder to defeat the Homestead Spartans out at Homestead. And so now you've got Bishop Lures, who's undefeated, 4-1 in the conference. You've got, or 5-0, if I do my math correctly. You've got Carroll that is 4-1, and then you have Snyder that is 3-1 because Snyder's played one less game because they didn't have the game against Southside. So those are your only one loss or less teams. Lewers, Carroll, and Snyder. Because now Dwenger has two losses, Homestead has two losses, and you have to assume the Bell is going to find a new home for 2022 because Homestead with two losses and head-to-head losses against two of the contenders, I have to think with Lewers owning a victory over Homestead, now Snyder owning the victory over Homestead, that Homestead is, if not mathematically out of it, basically out of the running. Unless you have five teams that all finish with two losses. But I just don't think that's not even going to be mathematically possible, I don't think. So it was a big night for Friday night high school football. South Adams ended up suffering their first loss. They lose the number one ranking in the state. They get beat 23-0 to Monroe Central. I don't think this is a huge surprise because South Adams, they had just been hit so hard, first with graduation, then with injuries. And it's been so tough for them, and really, to their credit, they have found ways to win with really an undermanned lineup, but it finally caught up with them. They played a team that's really good in Monroe Central who was fired up and pumped up to take on the Starfires after the Starfires had thumped them, I think, five times over the last 3 years, and so finally they got their revenge. Monroe Central wins it 23-0, and then coming up this Friday night, we've got the big one in Norwell, where the one-loss Norwell Knights are going to host the one-loss East Noble Knights. It's a battle of knights, both with one loss, and we'll be there. So, Norwell, I hope you show up to the Parkview Sports Medicine Tailgate pregame show. That will kick things off at 6 o'clock live from Norwell, and then play-by-play action of East Noble and the Norwell Knights with post-game at the Pizza Hut to follow. And, of course, the post-game show brought to you, as always, by Indiana Physical Therapy. Big night for high school football coming up this Friday night. Also this weekend, college football. Well, we already mentioned Indiana, disappointment. They gave away a game to Cincinnati, and we'll talk about some of the details on how they gave this game away coming up a little later in the show. But Indiana ends up falling 38-24 to the Cincinnati Bearcats. Meanwhile, Notre Dame won against Purdue. That was kind of a snooze fest. It wasn't much of a exciting game. Notre Dame wins at 27-13, so Notre Dame advances again. They just keep winning, and they keep putting wins up on their one-loss record, but I don't think anybody is impressed at this point with Notre Dame. I don't know if they're a top 15 team in the country, to be honest with you. I think they're somewhere maybe hanging around that 15-20 stage. I mean, I think they can be good and beat the majority of teams, but I don't think they're anywhere near the level of some of the elite teams in the country. Could Notre Dame go out and compete against an Alabama or go out and compete against a Georgia or a Clemson or an Ohio State right now? No, they'd actually get wiped off the field.
Well, I would take Clemson and Ohio State off that list at the moment. I mean, Clemson looked pitiful on Saturday against Georgia Tech, who's a team Notre Dame will play late in the season. I think with Notre Dame, we saw improvement, though, against Purdue. We saw a team that was able to get things done offensively when their best offensive player, Michael Mayer, was held to a catch, when Kevin Austin had a terrible game, but you saw other guys step up like Avery Davis. Big play run ability of Kyren Williams still there. Otherwise, it's been feast or famine. And, you know, the defense, I think, played a lot better, especially against a Purdue offense that can put up points.
I mean, that's a big key for Notre Dame, their secondary. They can't give up the big plays, and they've been doing that. And so they did a better job against Purdue. But still, Caleb, would you put them in the top 15?
I would put them in that 15-20 range. I honestly, I think Wisconsin is a team that is tremendously overrated.
And oh, really?
So, yeah, I mean, Graham Mertz, I understand he had all the hype and he had that amazing first start last year. But since then, he has not been very good. And I'm just not convinced that Wisconsin's offense can even put up points.
That's all the intrigue to me is going to be the quarterback matchup.
Yeah.
I want to see Jack Cohn go against his former team.
And while Wisconsin may have bigger guys, you know, on the line, and defensively they may have more experience, I kind of expect Notre Dame to win that game, because to me, Saturday against Purdue, going into it, I thought there's a chance Purdue could pull this upset off, but Notre Dame held David Bell in check, and hopefully Bell, who's now in concussion protocol, will be able to return sooner rather than later for the Boilers, since he is an exceptional talent. But to me, Notre Dame's defense answered the call Saturday, and to me, I think they should be the favorite against Wisconsin. I know they're not, but they should be.
By the way, that was one scary hit on David Bell, and all of the news that followed has been very encouraging and promising. David Bell himself tweeted on Sunday thanking Boiler Nation for all their thoughts and prayers, saying that he was feeling healthy, feeling better, couldn't wait to get back on the field. So that, I mean, as scary as that moment looked, and as, I mean, it looked like, I mean, I don't even know how to describe it, quite honestly. When you looked at his face, you just knew there he was not there. I mean, he'd been knocked completely out of his body and had to get back in. It was a tough play to swallow, but David Bell apparently doing well as of Sunday. And that's really good news, especially for Purdue Boilermakers fans. By the way, you mentioned Clemson, but there's a couple of other games that I found kind of interesting, and I thought a lot of the fans around here probably didn't pay attention because they happen really late. Sometimes you give up on college football at a certain hour, and you go on to NFL football the next day.
Not me. Pac-12 After Dark for life, baby.
Are you? You love the Pac-12?
Oh, I love it.
See, and I don't follow a lot of the late-night Pac-12, to be honest. It's like, by that time of night, I'm an old man ready to go to bed. And I started to look at Pac-12 scores because I'd heard something about UCLA getting beat. And sure enough, UCLA lost to Fresno State after UCLA gets that huge, what you think is somewhat of a program-changing win against LSU. And then they blow it. They give it back. They lose to Fresno State 40-37. And it's not a fluke because UCLA was outplayed by Fresno State. And then, oh my gosh, Arizona lost to Northern Arizona. Do you know how bad this has to be in the state of Arizona to lose to Northern Arizona, a team that was 0-2? That lost 34-7 to South Dakota and lost 42-16 to Sam Houston State, and they beat the Arizona Wildcats. What, I mean, Caleb, what has happened to Arizona?
Arizona's been bad for a few years.
I mean, this is beyond bad.
Oh, yeah, this is a rebuild for that team, that program. Remember, they shuffled through Kevin Sumlin. They had Rich Rod. It's fallen off the map since, a year or two ago. I mean, they had a guy who was a borderline Heisman candidate, you know, at quarterback. But, yeah, the Northern Arizona, they're the Lumberjacks, correct?
I don't know. I mean, who knows anything about Northern Arizona other than Marcus DeBerry, who was with the Mastodons, was a transfer, had transferred into Purdue Fort Wayne from Northern Arizona. I wouldn't have even known the university exists. It's in Flagstaff, I believe.
They are the Lumberjacks, and okay. It is in Flagstaff.
So that's about the extent of what I know about it. And they got beat. Now, are they an FCS school? Are they even an FBS? They're FCS, I think, aren't they? I'm looking at that. They played two FCS opponents, Sam Houston State and South Dakota. I think both of those schools are FCS schools.
They are FCS, yes.
So Arizona gets beat to an in-state school that is an FCS opponent. Wow. That's awful. And then Arizona State, the other Arizona, of course, coached by Herm Edwards, they ended up getting beat by BYU. BYU is a team to keep an eye on. You know, they don't have the conference affiliation. What can they do? I've been telling you. Okay.
This is the game I was looking forward to all day besides Notre Dame, Purdue, IU, Cincinnati. And I stayed up late all the way till probably about 1:45, 2 a.m. to watch this game. And BYU, again, looked really good. Their quarterback, Jaren Hall, looked good until he got injured late. And the backup, who is Baylor Romney, I believe the nephew of Senator Mitt Romney. He's a backup. He's started several games in previous seasons. Comes in, throws a touchdown to seal the game. So this team is really good. They have experience. They have great skill players. Yeah, well coached. going for the Pac-12 sweep. I think they have one more Pac-12 opponent left.
Yeah, it's back-to-back over Utah and Arizona State. Those are two and pretty decent
Arizona to start the season. So,
oh, well, again, we can't count an Arizona victory as a credible win.
They have Washington State and USC left on the schedule as far as Pac-12 schools. So, and
I mean, that's
USC
their best
game
case to get
close
to
the season,
to the playoffs, because they don't have the conference affiliation. So, I mean,
Baylor they have as well in mid-October.
Remember last year they had to play Coastal Carolina to try to make a statement, because they really didn't have anything on the resume that was worthy of any kind of consideration. So they had to schedule a special game against Coastal Carolina. But are you ready, though, to concede to me, Caleb, that Zach Wilson's overrated, and that I remember my comparison with Zach Wilson to Baker Mayfield, and I don't think I'm that far off. Four interceptions yesterday for Zach Wilson.
I mean, the Jets are just awful. I don't think that's necessarily on Zach Wilson. It's just a poorly run franchise. It's a bad team.
He tried to make hero plays every time. And Saleh, the coach, did call it out, that sometimes you have to play boring football in the NFL, and that's something Zach Wilson's going to have to learn. He tried to make the 20, 25-yard, 15-yard play downfield every time, and just kept having balls that were tipped off hands or overthrows that were intercepted. Four picks yesterday for Zach Wilson and the Jets loss. And you're right, the Jets are not very good. New England pounded them yesterday. And by the way, DC, former producer of this program, somebody good has to play the Broncos at some point, because the Broncos have played the New York Giants and the Jacksonville Jaguars. And of course they won both games, because those are two lousy opponents. And he's just having a heck of a time with a 2-0 Broncos team who has not played anybody. Wait till they start playing the teams in the conference. Like right now, Vegas, Las Vegas Raiders looking good. They get the win in Pittsburgh. And Derek Carr, my man, I've been a supporter of Derek Carr when it was not cool to support Derek Carr. And now it's almost becoming cool to support Derek Carr, because he's survived John Gruden now for 4 years in Las Vegas. A lot of trade rumors that have circulated around the Raiders and Derek Carr, and whether they were going to go after a quarterback, whether it be Tom Brady. And Derek Carr has survived it all. And it almost reminds me a little of the Jimmy Garoppolo situation. It's like everybody on the outside assumed that Gruden wasn't happy with Derek Carr, because Gruden's never happy with quarterbacks. But somehow they made it work. Derek Carr now with over 800 yards passing in the first 2 weeks of the season. And he carried the Raiders to the win against the Steelers. Great game. Sunday. Also in the NFL, Colts lose to the Rams. We'll talk plenty more about this coming up after the break. 27-24. And someone else that I have defended and spoke highly of, and I'm starting to lose some of my feelings toward one of the Colts staffers. I'll just say that. Bears beat the Bengals barely. Justin Fields got to make his debut as Andy Dalton went down injured. Fields struggled a bit, but that's to be expected. Being thrown into a game, I think, probably is tougher than planning for a start, where you kind of know what some of the scripted plays are. You know what the game plan is. The game plan's been set up for your skill set. But the Bears still hold on to defeat the Bengals 20-17. And bad news for the Colts. Tennessee with the huge comeback against Seattle. Caleb, I got to come clean. You know what I did? You remember when we made our NFL picks? Do you remember who I took in that game? It shocked you that I was taking Tennessee to win in front of the 12th man at Seattle, right?
Yeah. Seattle blew it.
I took Tennessee, and then Sunday morning I changed it. That has been my luck so far in the NFL. You pick them. I went in and I changed my pick to Seattle. I started to think about it and thought, Caleb's right. Tennessee can't go into Seattle. Russell Wilson at home. And so I changed it. And then I would have felt pretty good about the change through most of yesterday, until Tennessee had that furious rally behind Derrick Henry late. How is it that you run yourself to a comeback? I mean, it's normally you have to pass your way back. Derrick Henry actually was able to run them back into the game. And Tennessee comes back from the huge deficit to win it in overtime. So Tennessee now 1-1. They are a game ahead of the Indianapolis Colts. 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862. To Dylan Sin, Journal Gazette will be joining us in just a few minutes. You know we have to talk about it. The Colts fail and fall to the Rams 27-23. Two people that I have supported a lot and believe in and still feel like I want to believe in, Chris Ballard and Frank Reich, and I'm having my doubts. I'm starting to look at a lot of these draft picks that Chris Ballard was so highly praised for, and I'm starting to say, okay, show me something. I mean, there were problems Sunday with Julian Davenport, which was a guy that wasn't a draft pick, but he was a guy that they went out to pick up to, quote, provide depth in the offensive line. He's awful. And he's the best of the guys they've got to play backup tackle. I'm like, that's the best you can get? That either shows, number one, you can't evaluate the free agent market or the trade market that's out there, or number two, you have failed to find talent at the tackle position in past drafts when you should have been picking a tackle. Because Julian Davenport was beat time and time again. I mean, if you take any kind of lateral move on Davenport, it's over. He cannot move to his left or his right. I mean, he basically will stand up and he'll go mano a mano. He's like a big bear, you know, that just stands on its legs and puts up its hands. You go left and right, it's done. And he was burned time and time again. Glowinski, you know, everybody talks about this Colts offensive line. Show me something. The Colts offensive line has been terrible through three games. I think they've been overrated before. And Glowinski was getting blown up against the Rams yesterday. Now, you go against Aaron Donald, he blows a lot of people up. But it wasn't even Aaron Donald every time. And so I didn't think he had a very good game. I don't think that Ryan Kelly had a very good game. Kwity Paye, all we heard about during camp was how he was dominating camp. Well, now I know. He was lining up across from Davenport. That's why Paye looked so good. He was going up against a guy that can't block. And so Kwity Paye looks great in camp going against his own guys, but he hasn't even hardly had a quarterback pressure at this point. You never hear his name being called. Or Kamoko Touré. This improved Colts pass rush seems to not exist at this point. I think the only person that got into the backfield and applied pressure to Stafford yesterday was DeForest Buckner coming up the middle one time. Then you've got TJ Carey. He hasn't done anything great at corner. Julian Blackman, I think, along with Kari Willis, the two safeties, they've been caught in some pass coverage situations. And Bobby Okereke, I mean, he's fine to put out there in a passing situation on a third and long as maybe that linebacker, but he cannot do anything against the run. Zero. I watched him. First of all, he lines up 6 or 7 yards off the line of scrimmage, so he's already very deep to begin with. Then he also takes steps backwards to avoid blocks and ends up 8-9 yards downfield before he gets around a blocker and can come over to make a tackle, which means in most cases he's hitting running backs 5 or 6 yards down the field instead of getting to the gap. He cannot get to a gap. As a linebacker, you need somebody who's willing to go in and shoot the gap, take the gap away. He's not doing it. And so if it's not a lineman stuffing the hole, it is basically a 4 or 5 yard run minimum against the Colts so far in two games. I haven't been impressed with a lot of the Colts, and I'm starting to wonder, is it Chris Ballard and the assembly of this roster, and have we been sold a can of goods that this roster is so much better than maybe it actually is? Because right now, they're not playing well, and there's a lot of Colts you can start pointing fingers at that haven't played all that well. But then you come down to the play calling. Colts have it first and goal, 1 yard line. If the offensive line is so dominant, get 1 dang yard. How can you not get 1 stinking yard? Well, I'll tell you what you do is you invite the entire defense to jam the line of scrimmage by coming in with a triple tight end formation. The Colts basically sent a memo to the Rams. We're going to run the football between the tackles, put as many guys in the box as you'd like, and we'll see if you can beat us. And they did. instead of spacing it out, making it easy for the offensive linemen, it ended up being this jammed up defense that the Colts could not create any kind of hole. They did not get any kind of push, not anyone. I mean, they tried to run behind Quentin Nelson. That didn't work. They tried to run, in fact, twice they tried to run it behind Nelson off left guard. That got stuffed both times. Then they go to the trickery and have Carson Wentz running for his life. And here's the thing. When I come back to Frank Reich, first of all, I thought the whole sequence of play calls was terrible. Number two, on fourth down, you're going to go to that kind of play. Why is Jonathan Taylor the one slipping out of the backfield? Nyheim Hines, that is a perfect position for him to be in. He's the guy who's a little quicker, faster, a little shiftier. He's the one that can create the space to get the ball to on that quick little out route against the linebacker, trying to bite the linebacker on play action and then turn and throw it out to the running back in the flat. Why was it Jonathan Taylor that was trying to slide out into the flat in the end zone? Why wasn't it Nyheim Hines? Personnel issue? There was a lot I didn't like about the Colts play calling yesterday. I think it's become very predictable. And Frank Reich has this reputation as being this offensive genius that's such a great play caller. Somebody tell me how he got that reputation. Because I've watched how many years of Colts football now with him calling the plays, and I have not seen a genius that's calling plays. I watch Kansas City, and I think, boy, they're creative in how they set things up with their play calling. And then I watch the Colts, and it's like as soon as I see them line up, I can tell you pretty much what play they're going to run, whether they're going to run the football, whether they're going to try to dump it off short, maybe look for a tight end slipping out. You almost can tell before the play what the Colts are going to run based on formations and personnel packages. And so I don't know where Frank Reich got that reputation. I think he ran a Philly special and fooled Bill Belichick. And because of one play, he ends up being this offensive mastermind. But it hasn't proven with the Colts. And so I've had a lot. I mean, I've defended Frank Reich and have believed in Frank Reich as a head coach of the Colts. But, gosh, I'll tell you what. I keep seeing this over and over where it's costing the Colts football games, and I'm just not so sure. Colts end up falling 27-24 to the Rams yesterday. Lose by a field goal after failing to score on a first and goal at the one-yard line. And that wasn't the only time they blew opportunities. They had other opportunities. The shovel pass. Oh, I tell you what, I wish we had more time to talk about it. Because, I mean, this is something we could talk about all day. 4-6-8-6-2, your thoughts. Of course, Wentz ends up hurt. We'll talk about that later. Colts end up losing. You can give us your thoughts on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 4-6-8-6-2, 4-6-8-6-2. Coming up next, Dylan Sin, Journal Gazette. He'll join us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. It's a Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Brett Rump with Caleb Hatch. And on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline, it is Dylan Sin joining us from the Journal Gazette. He had a firsthand view of the Purdue Boilermakers Notre Dame Fighting Irish on Saturday. Dylan, let's talk about this game, what we learned. I think a lot of people were very concerned about the Irish, especially the secondary. They seemed to maybe step up a tad in this game.
Takeaway coming out of this game is that you kind of started to see the outlines of where Notre Dame wants its defense to be, where it thinks it can be, especially late in that second half where they held Purdue scoreless for the final 22 minutes of the game, picked off two passes late. Hal Hamilton said they came into the game annoyed, was the word that he used, by some of the kind of the issues with the defense and the way people were talking about it. And so it was always going to take time for them to kind of figure out the new defense under coordinator Marcus Freeman. They took a step forward against Purdue. They're going to have to take another step forward this week against Wisconsin, absolutely.
Who did we learn more about on Saturday when these two teams met? Because Purdue had two convincing wins against maybe not so good opponents. Notre Dame had two marginal wins against questionable opponents. And so when they met up, we were like, Purdue's got the chance here. Notre Dame put those thoughts to rest and ended up winning this game by a couple of touchdowns. So who did we end up walking away from Notre Dame Stadium with, having a better understanding of what they really are?
I think we came away with a better understanding of Notre Dame. They had the two big issues going into the game were the big plays on defense and the offensive line play. They took steps toward sixing both of those. They limited the big plays to just two plays of more than 30 yards, none of 60 as we saw in the first couple of weeks. And the offensive line, we started to see kind of where they might go to fix that in the second half in order to stop, as Brian Kelly said, stop George Karlaftis from wrecking the day. They brought in extra tight ends and played a lot of max protect with two receivers on the outside, and that seemed to work very well. They had a chance for a couple of really big plays. They didn't cash some of them in, but they had the opportunities, and Jack Cohen had some clean pockets. So you kind of started to see where Notre Dame could be. They started to figure some things out. Purdue, we still don't really know how good this team can be. We know that they have issues. They now have question marks at quarterback where they don't know. Jack Plummer remains a starter, but Aiden O'Connell's going to play. We don't know about the health of David Bell going forward as he's in the concussion protocol. And we still don't know whether that offensive line can create any push in Big Ten play for a run game of any kind. So there are still significant questions about Purdue, but I think we learned a fair amount about Notre Dame and what they look like if they end up being a good team this year.
Talking to Dylan Sin from the Journal-Gazette, of course, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish defeat Purdue on Saturday. So Notre Dame moves forward. They have Wisconsin. This will be truly the toughest test they've had so far. For the Irish, coming off this game against Purdue, what has to be the first and foremost concern for Notre Dame and Coach Brian Kelly with Wisconsin coming up?
I mean, it has to be that defensive front, right? It's one of the better defenses in the country, especially up front. They're big, they're strong, they're physical. And Notre Dame still has issues on the defensive line. They're down to their third-string left tackle. They have not quite gelled the line yet. And they did do some more max protect things, as I just talked about, against Purdue. The question is, A, whether that holds up against Wisconsin, and B, whether it will be good enough to move the ball and keep Jack Cohn upright, because that's going to be the biggest part of this game, is whether Notre Dame can give Jack Cohn any time to throw the ball against one of the better defensive fronts in football. We saw this defensive front make life miserable for Sean Clifford of Penn State, and then he went out and had a terrific game against Auburn. So we know that Wisconsin can make some trouble for high-level opponents, and we don't even know yet whether Notre Dame is a high-level opponent at this point.
We'll keep an eye on it. Always appreciate your coverage. Always appreciate you jumping on with us, Dylan. We'll talk to you again soon.
Absolutely, Brett. Always glad to do it. Thanks for having me on.
Dylan Sin, Journal-Gazette, joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. We were talking about the Colts and their struggles on Sunday, and boy, there were so many. Twice failing from inside the 10-yard line. First and goal at the one. I mean, I wonder what the percentages are on coming away with no points, because the Colts were able to achieve something that's pretty difficult to achieve. I mean, it's hard not to get a yard, especially when you don't even have a penalty involved. Then the shovel pass, which, of course, got intercepted. Almost an inexcusable Carson Wentz no-look shovel pass play. I don't even know if he was looking. It looked like he was looking the other direction and just kind of shoveled it behind him. And Wentz took some real risk in that game, including the throw as he was being tackled by Aaron Donald, which ultimately may have been what got him hurt. Ended up rolling not one, but two ankles. We haven't gotten any kind of final report, I don't think, on him medically. I know he was going to undergo MRIs on both ankles, but Wentz tried it on the sideline in a drop back and trying to plant and push off. He just didn't have anything on that ankle, didn't feel it was reliable. So Jacob Eason comes into the game and promptly throws an interception, overthrowing his intended receiver down the sideline. So not a good day for the Colts. Overall, Caleb, your thought on what we saw from the Colts yesterday? A lot of mistakes, questionable play calls, giving up points when you're in the red zone, which I think is so crucial. And yesterday they paid for it. They lost a game they quite honestly could have and should have won just because of those failures.
I don't know about could have or should have won. I mean, going into the game,
they took the ball up and down the field against the Rams. They took it up and down the field. They did everything they needed to do to win the football game except score.
You have to complete the drive, and the Colts have shown an inability to do that so far through two games. And I'm sorry, but if you expected the Colts to win both of these first two games, you're nuts. Like, I'm just saying, like, you are insane for thinking that they were going to beat Seattle and LA. I'm splitting them as a best case scenario. There is no world that they were going to go 2-0 against those two teams. It just was not going to happen. Unrealistic expectations, I think, are part of the problem, whether that's with the fan base, whether that's with you. I don't know what it is, but I'm sorry. The Colts are simply not that good of a football team. I picked them to be 7-10 for a reason going into the season, Brett. It's because you have a quarterback who can't stay healthy. We're seeing that happen right now. We have an offensive line that is an absolute mess when they're supposed to be the strength of the team, a defense that is completely underperformed, coaching that just simply doesn't make sense. I mean, you go down to the goal line and you run three straight running plays up the gut, get nothing, and then you do a little tricky rollout pass play on fourth down. If your offensive line is so great, you're going to score on first or second down. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, this is a bad football team. It's that simple.
I don't know about bad. I'm not conceding bad because they did compete against both Seattle and against the Rams. And those are two pretty good football teams. Now, what's discouraging is that Tennessee was able to go out to Seattle and beat the Seahawks in Seattle with that 12th man in one of the loudest places you're going to encounter a football game. But the Colts are dealing with injuries. It was the first game back for Eric Fisher at left tackle. They did not have Braden Smith at right tackle, and so you end up with Julian Davenport, who is not the answer for a backup. In fact, I'd have loved to see more of Pryor. I don't know if Matt Pryor ended up playing any snaps. I saw Davenport out there, not sure about Pryor. But then you end up with T.Y. Hilton on the injured list. You end up with Paris Campbell once again hurt and missing football. Carson Wentz gets hurt. All of these guys that we thought were liabilities when it comes to injuries, and it's all playing out. Is it a bad football team? I don't think it's a bad football team. I still think it's a decent football team that can make the playoffs and compete for an AFC South championship. I still think that. And whether I'm wrong to think that, I might be wrong. But I do think that. But you've got to have things that aren't going the way they're going right now, like the injuries, like Carson Wentz playing to his potential, like this offensive line actually looking like the offensive line we expect it to be, and everybody around the NFL thinks it is, and the Colts aren't getting that right now. The defense, which was supposed to be, quote, elite, according to Stephen Holder. I believe in Stephen Holder. I love what he writes. But this defense has had holes, is porous. Bobby Okereke is not the answer lined up next to Darius Leonard at the linebacker position. He's great in speed situations, covering guys out of the backfield or covering tight ends, but he is not the answer to come in and stuff the run. And I think you've got to figure out what kind of scheme do we need to use here to whether it covers up some of our deficiencies, because they've been badly exposed. The offensive line's been exposed. A lot of the holes defensively in the secondary, where you've got, again, injury. Xavier Rhodes is not out there. A lot of these guys are guys the Colts opted to bring back and trusted that they would be healthy, and they're not. But I still believe this could be a good football team. Yes, a lot of people didn't expect them to win both of the first two games. But you hoped for, and I repeat this, hoped that they could split the first two. I had them 2-3 after five games. They still got a chance to get there, but they got a lot of work to do to get there now based on their current situation. Carson Wentz, if he doesn't play, I don't feel good about where Jacob Eason is, especially going on the road for the next three games, which the Colts have to do now after opening with the first two at home. I don't know. Does it change expectations? Let's ask the fan base, the people listening. Does it change your expectations after what you've seen in 2 weeks for the Colts, the fact they lost both these games? Because 3 months ago, we were expecting it would be tough to win either one of these games or both of them. But I don't think anybody thought, oh, they'll win those two. I think in my mind, I was hoping to go 1-1 through the first two and then try to win one of the three road games. And I thought Miami would probably be the best chance to win a road game. And now Miami has Jacoby Brissett, which means Brissett will probably be pumped up like there's no tomorrow to face the Indianapolis Colts, probably have a huge day against the Colts, given the situation that the Colts opted to move on from Jacoby Brissett. I don't know, Caleb. I think we asked 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Text us your thoughts on where the Indianapolis Colts are right now.
I mean, injuries aside, because every team has injuries, where they're at right now going into Sunday, I would be surprised if Carson Wentz is healthy enough to play because of double ankle sprain. If one of them's a high ankle sprain, I mean, that's a 4 to 6 week timeline. So, I mean, if he is out, say, until mid-October, how are they going to get back into the playoff situation?
The problem is we thought, okay, before the season, we thought the Colts' identity would be establish the run, pound the run, with Jonathan Taylor, Marlon Mack, Nyheim Hines. You had a running game that was going to be able to control the football game, control the clock, and the quarterback would have very little that he would have to do. What we have seen through 2 weeks is that's completely not true. The Colts can't run the football. Jonathan Taylor's been a major disappointment, and a lot of that is because the offensive line can't run block. Quite simple. They cannot run block. They're not creating any kind of holes up front. And so you end up with running backs that are averaging 3 yards a carry. That puts the Colts behind the chains, and you end up with these third and longs. You end up with second and long, where you're almost forced to pass, and here comes the pass rush on Carson Wentz, and he's been taking a beating. The entire MO and way the Colts were actually put together is completely collapsing because they are not a running team. They cannot run the football right now with this offensive line. They've got to be better than what they've been. If they do establish some kind of an identity as being a running football team, fine. Maybe you can win with a Jacob Eason because you take the pressure off the quarterback. That's what we've been told. That's why we had hopes that Carson Wentz would be better, because he'd have this great offensive line and a team that would be able to run the football, taking the pressure off Carson Wentz, plus he'd have protection to step back and throw. None of that has been true. None of it has been even close to true. We were sold a bag of goods, if that's what we believed about the Indianapolis Colts, and I was one of them that believed it. And I will admit it. I bought it. It's not true. That is not the identity of the Colts.
They can't run the football, and they should be really good at it because, well, they were pretty good at it last season. You have a young running back, stars on the offensive line, but the line is either not healthy or they're not performing up to expectations, and it's caused the mess they're in right now.
And so, once again, the Colts are what we thought they weren't. I mean, basically.
And we can't let them off the hook this time.
No, we believe they were something they're not. I mean, this is totally opposite of the whole Dennis Green thing. It's kind of like instead of they were who we thought they were, it's they're not who we thought they were. And now they've got to figure it out because the offensive line, even after being challenged after week one, did not get a whole lot better yesterday. And as a result, you got a quarterback that's taken a beating and eventually ends up hurt. What's that sound like? Sounds like Andrew Luck's career all over again with an offensive line that was completely replaced because apparently they weren't good enough. Now they're doing it again. And so, yeah, it's tough after 2 weeks. It's a lot of season left, and I'm not giving up hope that the Colts are going to make the playoffs. Everybody wants to say, oh, you've jumped ship after only 2 weeks. No, I haven't, but I'm also analyzing what the Colts have looked like through 2 weeks, and it's been pretty darn disappointing. And if you're a Colts fan, you should be pretty darn disappointed. And what you're disappointed in is that they played really poorly yesterday, and they still had a chance to win the football game and then didn't because they played poorly in certain scoring situations. First and goal at the one. First and goal inside, what, the 5-yard line, 7-yard line when they threw the shovel pass. I mean, they had opportunities that they could have won this football game, and they didn't, and that is disappointing. 468-62, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 468-62. Worst rule in football. We might have two to choose from, and we'll bring up both when we come back at the top of the hour. It's the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.